This morning, I want to thank the elders for the opportunity to speak to you all this morning. Got back from Murfreesboro and ended up with a sermon on Sunday. So luckily I had one that I had ready, prepared, I delivered in Murfreesboro, and I'll do that one this morning. I think it's safe to say that many Americans are consumed with appearances. If you were to ask someone to describe a very successful person, they would probably say he has nice clothes, he has a huge home, he has an extremely expensive car. We like to think about those outward things. We don't really think about the inward qualities or characteristics that made that person successful. We usually don't describe that person as being driven or believing in hard work or a very patient man. And I think the same thing applies for Christians. If I were to ask any of you here to describe a very good, righteous Christian, you would probably start with outward qualities. He shows up to church every Sunday morning and evening. He's here every Wednesday night. I see him giving every Sunday. His children are very well behaved. Yep, that's a good Christian. But we never really think about the inward Christian. And so the question I like to ask this morning is, what about that inner man? Is he important? Should we think about him? Is he judged? Well, if you will, open up your Bibles to Mark chapter 7. We'll see what the Lord has to say about it. It's Mark chapter 7. And before we get into the reading of this particular passage, I'm going to give a little bit of background. At the beginning of that chapter, Jesus has just had a conversation with some Pharisees. The Pharisees are concerned that Jesus' disciples are in sin because the disciples have refused or forgotten to wash their hands before a common meal. For the Pharisees, sin was an outward contaminant. It was something you visibly did or something you visibly did not do. And this spiritual misconception, if you will, was something that the Pharisees had done over and over and over again. So much so that it was considered part of typical Pharisee habits to think of sin as an outward contaminant. If you think back to Matthew chapter 5 and verse 20, when Jesus is speaking to the people there at the Sermon on the Mount, he says, "Your righteousness must exceed the righteousness of the Pharisees." Because for a Pharisee, as long as he actually didn't murder anyone, then he thought he was in complete obedience with the law, "Thou shalt not murder." But as Jesus went on to say, even to think angry thoughts, to verbally abuse someone, murder them in your mind, if you will, well, that was just as much sin as if you'd actually pulled the trigger. To Jesus, sin was something that you could indeed visibly do, but at the same time, sin could also be bottled up within you, in your mind, that hate and anger that were kept within. And the Pharisees didn't completely understand that sin could be both outward and inward. Jesus' disciples actually did not seem to understand it completely either. And so Jesus takes some time to explain this point to his disciples in Mark chapter 7. So if you're still there, we're going to start reading in verse 17. Mark 7, verse 17. "When he had entered a house away from the crowd, his disciples asked him concerning the parable. So he said to them, 'Are you thus without understanding also? Do you not perceive that whatever enters a man from outside cannot defile him? Because it does not enter his heart, but his stomach, and is eliminated, thus purifying all foods. And he said, What comes out of a man, that defiles a man. For from within, out of the heart of men, proceed evil thoughts, adulteries, fornications, murders, thefts, covetousness, wickedness, deceit, lewdness, an evil eye, blasphemy, pride, foolishness. All these evil things come from within, and defile a man.'" In verse 21 and 22, we see several sins. According to Jesus, all these things start from within us. So if I were to commit fornication, it all started because within me I started lusting after a woman. If I were to commit murder, before I pulled the trigger, I thought about how much I hated that person. Or before I stole someone's car, I thought about how wonderful of a car that was, how I coveted that car. All these sins started from within me. And so if sin can start from within us, should our inner man worry us? Is our inner man judged? How do we need to handle this? How do we need to treat this inner man? Well, Paul has this conversation over in 1 Corinthians. We turn over to 1 Corinthians chapter 4. First 1 Corinthians chapter 4, and we're going to be starting in verse 3. But with me it is a very small thing that I should be judged by you or by a human court. In fact, I do not even judge myself. For I know of nothing against myself, yet I am not justified by this. But he who judges me is the Lord. Therefore judge nothing before the time, until the Lord comes, who will both bring to light the hidden things of darkness and reveal the counsels of the hearts. Then each one's praise will come from God. It didn't matter what men said, or what a human court said, and ultimately it didn't even matter what he himself said. Paul was not worried about men's judgment, because a man can only see what happens on the outside. What Paul says in verse 4 is that he who judges me is the Lord. Why was Paul so concerned with the Lord's judgment? Well, the Lord can see the outside, but in verse 5 we find out that the Lord can see both the hidden things of darkness and reveal the counsels of the hearts. The Lord can see outside and inside. The Lord sees the whole picture. And that's why he is the one who judges us. And so the inner man, while everyone doesn't see it, while the Pharisees and the disciples struggled with what does it all mean, the inner man is indeed judged. And we need to watch our inner man. We need to know what our inner man is thinking, what our inner man is doing. But how can we do that? Seems a difficult task. Well, there's two things I think we can do to keep our inner man pure. And the first is to watch what we see, to think about what we're looking at, to think about what we put in front of our eyes. And to explain the reasoning for that, if you will, turn over to Matthew chapter 6. Matthew chapter 6 and verse 22. Matthew chapter 6, verse 22 reads, "The lamp of the body is the eye. If therefore your eye is good, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If therefore the light that is in you is darkness, how great is that darkness?" According to this passage here, Christ says that the eye is the lamp of our body. Whatever goes through our eyes fills up our whole body. If what we let in is light, good things, our body will likewise be good. If what we let in is evil and corrupt, then we're going to be wicked and evil and sinful people. What I think is extremely interesting about this passage is that it never says that we can be full of dimness, that we can be partially light and partially dark at the same time. You are either one or the other. And I think that point is made even more clearly if you just keep reading into verse 24, a verse that many of us are familiar with. "No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will be loyal to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon." It must be one or the other. You're good or you're bad. If all you look at is bad all day, then what's going to be on the inside of you is going to be just as bad. And it works for the same way. If what you look at is good, the inside of you will be good. So how can we make sure what's coming into us is good? Well, if you will, turn over to the book of Psalms. Look at the 101st Psalm, Psalm 101. When we get to Psalm 101, we're going to be looking at the first part of verse 3. "I will set nothing wicked before my eyes." Now, if you will, turn over to Psalm 119, 119th Psalm. We'll be looking at verse 37. Psalm 119, verse 37. It says, "Turn away my eyes from looking at worthless things and revive me in your way." Worthless does not necessarily mean sinful. Worthless just means it's of no use, it's not productive. Might as well not waste your time sitting there looking at it because it's not going to do you any good. The psalmist says, don't put worthless things before our eyes and don't put wicked things before our eyes. Now, we don't know exactly who wrote Psalm 119, but we do know David wrote Psalm 101. And I don't know exactly what David was thinking in 2 Samuel chapter 11, but as soon as he went up on the roof, saw Bathsheba through the open window, well, it was only a matter of minutes before sin was on its way. Not only adultery, but eventually murder. So I'm inclined not just to believe David because he's inspired, believe him because of experience. What you look at has a great impact on what you do. So don't seek worthless and wicked things before our eyes. And how is it that all these things, all these sins can happen just because of sight? Well, if you will, look over at 1 John. Look at 1 John chapter 2. This is a passage many of us are quite familiar with. 1 John chapter 2 and verse 15 and 16. It says, "Do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world." And any time we talk about sin, we usually like to categorize it in one of these three categories here. The lust of the flesh, or it's the lust of the eyes, or it's the pride of life. Well, if we try to break those down and try to realize where did they all start, it's all about sight. If, as I said a little bit earlier, if you start to lust after someone, start to lust after a woman maybe, where did it start? Well, it started because you looked at her for the first time. If you were to lust after someone's car, well, how do you see that? Well, every morning you wake up and you drive to work and you pass it. Every time in your neighbor's driveway, you see it. What about the pride of life? Well, if my desk is closer to the boss's at work, or if I'm invited to more meetings at work than someone else is, well, eventually over time, because I've seen the way I was treated, I've seen where I am, I must be better than someone else. All these things can happen just because of what we see. So what do we look at today? Well, for anything like the national average, we probably watch a lot of television. According to statistics, every American watches a little shy of about 1,600 hours a year. Now, if you expand that out into days, that's about 66. That adds up to about 2 months. And over a lifetime of 80 years, that will amount to 13 years. So 13 years of nonstop, non-sleep watching television. Now, I've heard of some Friday night movies, but that seems a little extreme. So what are we watching? Well, I'm not going to get into that. All of us know what we watch on television. But there are some trends that are emerging in television today that we can't overlook. I was thinking about this only last week. When I was a child in the early 90s, my mother found it very easy to find G, or general audience rated movies, for me to watch. Last week I was doing a camp with some very young kids. One was as young as 4 at the museum where I work, and we needed to get a movie. And so I went to the store and started looking frantically for whatever I could find. All I could find was PG movies, parental guidance. Now, to some of us, that doesn't mean much, but why, in a period of 20 years, do parents need to be present according to a rating system? Well, there could be a number of things for it. Maybe it's just the profanity and the vulgarity these days. Not all movies have those 4-letter words in them, but if you ever notice more and more movies use the Lord's name in vain. OMG, oh my God. They're dropped all over the place and we hardly even think about it anymore. And if we do see it, well, we think, well, at least it doesn't have any of those bad words and it's just the Lord's name in vain. We don't really take shame in hearing that said anymore. What about the pornography sometimes in shows these days? It used to be you had to go look for it. Now all you have to do is sit in front of a television set for a couple hours and it'll find you. Men and women are wearing less and less, and not just movies, even commercials these days. But it's not just the big things, it's those subtle things. How many times in movies are kids growing up in a divorced home when parents find the easiest way out of a situation is divorce? Or when kids disrespect their parents and everyone just says, well, that's them just being teenagers. These aren't the habits, these aren't the things that we as Christians should be filling our minds with, because if that's what we see, well, that's what's in our body, that's what we're processing. And it could be television, it could be Facebook, it could be any form of social media or video games. But what do we always say? Well, I know it's bad. I know the television isn't as good as it used to be, but it's really funny. It just cracks me up sometimes. Or we say it has a good plot. It's really it just keeps me going. Well, do you think God's laughing at it? Do you think God thinks it's a particularly interesting plot? Think about that maybe next time you watch that show. Or sometimes we say, I learn things from these shows. what happens in this show may actually play out in my life. And if I were to watch this show, I would know how to handle it. Well, the Bible has been giving fairly good advice, I would say, for hundreds of years. That didn't stop because the television came into the American home in the 1950s. And then sometimes we say, worst of all, I know it's bad, but I'm a Christian. It doesn't affect me. We think because we were raised in the church, some of us, or because we know the Bible, that we're immune to these sort of things. We can just watch this, and because we know what's right and wrong, it doesn't affect us. Well, thinking about to what we talked about a little earlier, David was described as a man after God's own heart. But just a quick walk on the roof was enough to cause him to sin. And I don't know if any of us think of ourselves as men after God's own heart, but I don't think we're much better than David. But just what we watch, that's not the only thing that can prevent us from thinking bad thoughts or to keep our inner man pure. What we do with our time also has a significant impact on that. And if you will, look over at Ephesians chapter 5. Ephesians chapter 5, we're going to be looking at verse 15. Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 15. See then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time because the days are evil. Circumspectly is a word we don't use much these days. It means diligently. It means to do something with your all. Give it everything you've got. And what are we supposed to do so diligently? We're supposed to walk wisely, but we're supposed to redeem the time. I like how the New American Standard Version translates that. It says, making the most of our time. So how are we supposed to make the most of our time? Well, God outlines for us several things in the Bible that we can do. The first can be found in Matthew chapter 5. You don't need to turn there. Most of us are familiar with Matthew chapter 5, verse 14 through 16. It says we're supposed to be lights to the world. There should be no time when a basket is over our light, when our light is hidden. It's always supposed to be shining. But a similar point is made in Matthew chapter 9, if you will turn there. Matthew chapter 9. We're going to be looking at verse 37. Matthew 9, 37. Then he said to his disciples, "The harvest truly is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Therefore, pray the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into his harvest." He says, the harvest truly is plentiful. There will always be more souls. There will always be more people to talk to than we have enough time to talk to in this life. There is always someone to go to. There is always something to do. But, as a preacher I heard once said, maybe we should just stop praying for laborers because they're all just sitting on the couch watching television. How are we using our time? Are we getting out there and being lights? Are we getting out there and being laborers? Are we just sitting around and thinking about it? There's other things we can do besides spread the gospel. If you will, look at James chapter 1. James chapter 1, verse 27. This is another verse many of us are probably familiar with. James chapter 1, verse 27. It reads, "Pure and undefiled religion before God and the Father is this, to visit orphans and widows in their trouble, and to keep oneself unspotted from the world." It's talking here to oneself. It's talking to individuals. People need to go out and visit orphans and widows in their trouble. Thinking about that and extending it out, when was the last time you visited someone who was sick or shut in, or in a nursing home who had just lost a loved one? How many times do you write cards to these people or fix them meals if that's needed? How often do we think about those in need? Or when we think about those in need, do we think about what our group or work group is doing? Well, I don't have to write a card because I know somebody else has probably written it already. I don't need to fix a meal because somebody has probably taken care of that. Well, I only have to do it maybe once a month. I'll just do it when the group meeting meets and that'll be done. How often do we think about the orphans and the widows and those people in trouble? But not just the gospel, not just helping other people. We have other things we need to do. If you will, look over at 1 Thessalonians 5 and verse 17. The verse many of us probably know by heart. 1 Thessalonians 5, 17. It says, pray without ceasing. Now, I don't think that necessarily means we just need to pray 24/7. If we were to do that, that would mean shirking responsibilities we've just read about. We were praying praying all the time, we wouldn't have time to spread the gospel or to visit the sick. So what does it mean then to pray without ceasing? It means to always have an attitude or a mindset that we could pray. That if we run into something we don't think we can overcome, we run into a question or a struggle, we can stop and pray to God and He will help us find the answer. But we shouldn't just pray to God when we're struggling. We should make time to pray to Him every day, to thank Him for all the many blessings He's given us. If we think back to Daniel chapter 6, verse 10, it says, Daniel prayed 3 times daily, as was his custom since early days. And I don't think those 3 prayers were the ones before breakfast, lunch, and dinner. He made time to pray every single day. Of something he planned to do, something he wanted to do, something he did without ceasing. But if we consider a prayer to be somewhere between 5 and 10 minutes, well, that's only 30 minutes of a day. Well, not everyone's sick all the time, so maybe we can do that once or twice a month. How often should we do all these things? God has given us these things to do, but how often should we do them? Well, if you will, turn over to Matthew chapter 24. We're going to start reading there in verse 42. Matthew chapter 24, we're going to start reading in verse 42. It says, Watch, therefore, for you do not know what hour your Lord is coming. But know this, that if the master of the house had known what hour the thief would come, he would have watched and not allowed his house to be broken into. Therefore you also be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect. Who then is a faithful and wise servant, whom his master made ruler over his household, to give them food in due season? Blessed is that servant whom his master, when he comes, will find so doing. Assuredly I say to you that he will make him ruler over all his goods. But if that evil servant says in his heart, My master is delaying his coming, and begins to beat his fellow servants, and to eat and drink with the drunkards, the master of that servant will come on a day when he is not looking for him, and in an hour that he is not aware of, and will cut him in two and appoint him his portion with the hypocrites. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Here we have a servant whose master has decided to go away on a trip. That trip could be a couple of days, several months, could even be years. And that servant, in the meantime, has been entrusted with several responsibilities, one of which is to rule over the household, to give them food in due season. Now, if these servants are anything like us today, we probably eat 3 meals daily, every single day. Now, especially for you mothers out there who stay at home, feed your family, you know you don't get Saturdays and Sundays off. You probably even work harder on those days. Feeding people is a full-time business. And if this was just one of this man's responsibilities, not mentioning all the other he had on top, he was going to be a very, very busy man. Now, let's just say that the master was gone for over a year. Wouldn't you say that maybe he should be able to take off a few days, take some vacation time? Well, what if he were to do that? What's it say in verse 48? But if that evil servant says in his heart, My master is delaying his coming, well, that master in verse 50 will come at a time he's not ready. In verse 51, he will cut him in two and appoint his portion with the hypocrites. This man has no time to take off. This man has a responsibility that will be every single day, every single hour, morning till evening. And we have a master. It's the Lord. And His coming is not a matter of if, it's only a matter of when. And He will come. And He has given us responsibilities to do. We just read some of them. So how often do we need to be doing these? This is a full-time job. Something we need to be doing every single day and every single hour. Because what did verse 42 say? I like this word. It says, Watch, therefore, watch. Watch is an action verb. It's not one you sit around and think about. It's something you get up and you do. We always need to be working. God has given us what we need to do with our time. Now, just a few thoughts to kind of pull all of this together. Now that we know what we need to be looking at, and we know what we need to be doing with our time, just think about what we do with our time. Before my father retired, both mom and dad were teachers, and my undergraduate was in teaching. And so there was one point that all three of us were in the same county at the same time. And we would come home, I from high school, dad from middle school, mom from elementary school, and we'd sit around the table and we'd talk about what happened. We'd talk about lessons that went well, lessons that did not go well, children that behaved, and those that misbehaved. And then eventually we'd always get to the point where mother would just say, Stop. Just stop. We're not at work anymore. Let's not even talk about it. Let's not even think about it. think every time we meet some friends of ours, especially on Wednesday night services, and they ask how we're doing, what do we say? Well, work went well today. We got a new machine or a new rule at work. And especially for those people who get home in the evenings and they don't talk, it's usually because work is on their mind and they don't want to talk about it. Why do we think about work so much? Well, it's what we do 8 hours a day. What we do is what we think about. So as you go home today, as you go on the rest of your life, if you fill your time with bad things, wicked things, TV shows you might not should be watching, other things you might should not be doing, then what are you going to be thinking about? You're going to be thinking about those wicked things. And if you go home and you read your Bible and you visit the sick and you pray, what are you going to be thinking about? You'll be thinking about good things, God's things. As Jesse Flowers once said, what he said kind of stuck with me. I think it's a wonderful way to make this point. He said, "Many a night I have gone to sleep and I have said, I wish I had more time to have read the Bible today. I wish I had more time to pray today. I wish I had more time to visit the sick today. But I never say, well, I wish I had more time to watch TV. I wish I had a chance to check my email. I wish I had a chance to check Facebook because I have no idea what my friends are doing right now." We never say that, do we? But we always say, "I wish I had more time to read my Bible." Is that where our priorities are? Is that what we should be thinking about and doing all the time? I'll leave you with one last thought. Let's look quickly at the scripture reading this morning. That's Philippians chapter 4. Philippians chapter 4. We're going to be looking specifically here at verse 8. Philippians chapter 4, verse 8. It says, "Finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are good report, if there is any virtue, and if there is anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things." If you will, think of this as a checklist. As you go through your life, as you go through what you do, your hobbies, your work, think about it. Is what I say true? Is the shows I watch noble? Are the shows that I watch noble? Are my hobbies just? Is what I do with my friends on a Friday night, is that pure? Is that lovely? Is it a good report? Well, is it or is it not? If it isn't, probably need to correct that. If it is, then just keep up the good work. So, comes to the invitation. If there's any of you that are worried about that inner man, maybe you haven't been doing as much as you should in regards to him, this is a time set aside, especially if that sin or that concern is a public matter, to come and repent of it. If you've never been baptized, you never obey the gospel, then it's time to. You've heard the word this morning. You've hopefully believed it. Repent and confess publicly. In Romans 10, verse 10. And then be baptized according to Acts 2:38. So if you have need, come now. Come as we stand and as we sing.